All right, guys, you are locked on Falcons. I'm your host, Aaron Freeman. Today, I am joined by Justin Higdon, who covers the draft for Revenge of the Birds, the SB Nation site for the Arizona Cardinals. We're going to be talking quite a bit about the combine, who could rise, who could fall, and much, much more.
You are locked on Falcons, your daily podcast on the Atlanta Falcons, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Justin, welcome back to the show. We had you on last year talking a little bit about the combine in terms of certain guys that you thought would test well or not test well particularly. We'll get to that a little bit later, but I just want to extend my welcome for you to come back for another year.
Hey, Aaron, it's good to be back. I appreciate you having me on. It's always, this is kind of pretty much my favorite time of year now that everything's all the dust has settled, the games are over, and people really get started and digging into the takes, and the combine really steps it up another notch. So I'm excited for this. It's happening in a couple weeks, and it's always fun to see where that takes everybody.
Yeah, I know for – I'm curious sort of how you factor the combine into your own evaluation of these players. I know for me personally, it really wasn't until about 2012 where I really started to consider the combine, put any serious weight to the combine. I know prior to that, it was one of those things where it's like, yeah, I want to find out how fast a guy runs his 40, whether he has 4.5 speed or 4.4 speed. But, you know, for me, it's the underwear Olympics, and it's really only been in the last 5 years where I've sort of not looked at it and been as dismissive with it, as you'll still find certain people in the media that are very dismissive of it. I know for one example I can think of is Ross Tucker, who does a podcast that I listen to. And I think part of the reason why he's very dismissive of the combine, because he was an NFL player, did not test particularly well. And so he, you know, he puts a lot of value certainly in himself and sort of the, I guess the guys that are the, as many people will term them, the overachievers, or as opposed to the athletic specimens. But I'm curious sort of how you see the combine in your own process.
For me, it's been kind of an evolution. Like I was, when I first started doing this, it was around the 2010, 2011 drafts. And back then it was pretty commonplace for people to say, you know, the tape is 95% or whatever of the evaluation and the combine's 5%. And I don't think that's true, but it kind of swung the other way to the point where around 2013, 2014, everybody was heavily into the Seattle Seahawks way of evaluating things, and that got into the Nike Spark formula. So I tried to play around with the formulas a little bit, and I found that that really, to me, it wasn't a really effective way to evaluate any football players. It was interesting to see the guys who were the real freaks of nature, but if somebody hadn't put it together on the field and then was a freakish athlete, it really didn't seem to mean much as far as projecting their success. So I've kind of got to the point where I'm looking at specific tests for specific players. You can get kind of general with receivers and defensive backs. I think if you see a guy that's running 4.6, 40 or slower, that's almost a player that you don't want to spend a draft pick on. But if you have a running back that runs a 4.6, then it might not be that big of a problem. It just depends on what type of running back it is. Is it a small scat back type? Is it a between the tackles type? So I look at the different tests for the individual. I think one player that kind of taught me a lesson was Devontae Freeman, because he's a smaller guy. He didn't run a great 40. And if you look at him from a formula standpoint, from a spark standpoint, he wasn't that good of a prospect. But if you looked at what he did production-wise and on tape at Florida State, you can see how his game would translate to the pros. And I think I just kind of missed the boat on him because I put a little bit too much stock into the athletic testing. So now it's more about, like, if it's a pass rusher, a receiver, you want some more explosiveness. You want to see, do they have a pretty good vertical jump, broad jump, 40 time. If it's a running back, for example, Ezekiel Elliott or Leonard Fournette, they didn't even run the shuttles. So how important is a three-cone drill or the short shuttle, the 20-yard shuttle. I'm not really sure. I'm not really sure how much that matters. So it's a fluid approach for me. I think it is important. I think it's maybe more important for telling us guys who don't have the baseline athleticism for football, for pro football. But I'm not sure as a predictor, I don't think we're there yet. And I really don't know that other than if a guy's like runs a 4.3 and he's a burner like Will Fuller, you can count on that guy being able to get open deep in the NFL. But that doesn't necessarily mean long-term success. You know, Fuller's been actually really good when he's been healthy. But so I don't know. It's a fluid process for me. I think it's always evolving. And I do think it's very interesting because there are some things that you can that can trigger you on a positive or a negative side in your evaluation.
Justin, don't worry. You weren't the only one that was wrong with Devontae Freeman. Part of my miss on Devontae Freeman was because he tested similar to a former Falcon who's now with the Buccaneers and Quiz Rogers, and looking at Freeman, and I'm like, oh, well, he doesn't really do anything better than Quiz Rogers. He was very productive at Florida State, but I've watched Quiz Rogers be a good backup running back in the NFL, and I don't really have an expectation that Devontae is going to be more than that. He's obviously proven that thought process to be very false, but you're not the only one in that boat that sort of put a little bit too much stock in Devontae not necessarily running the best 40 time in some of these other drills and whatnot.
Yeah, it's really just an individual thing. With some guys, it's, you know, it's cheesy. People say you can't measure the heart or the dedication, but it really, that is what it comes down to in a lot of these cases, and it's something we can't see from the combine, but we can still see, for example, when it was Ray Graham from Pittsburgh. I remember seeing him in an All-Star game a few years ago, and he was one of the best running backs on the field at this All-Star game, but then he got to the combine and ran a 4.8, and he was about a shade over 200 pounds, I think, or maybe a shade under, but that 4.8 just wasn't going to cut it. So in some cases, you just know it's over for a guy mm-hmm. when it has a really bad or a really poor day.
Yeah. So last year we had you on, I guess maybe we can say you infamously expected Myles Garrett to not test particularly well. That proved to be untrue.
Right.
I'm curious, what did you learn in that process in terms of that, you know, prominent miss, as we might refer to it?
So with Garrett, one of the things I missed on is how much the player's body had changed from high school to the pros. And Garrett came out of high school as a 240-something pound guy, and by the time he got to the NFL combine, he was in the 275 pound range. So he had put on 30 pounds or so of muscle, and it was clear that affected the way he tested, you know. And one of the things that I've seen now that we have a little bit more data that kind of goes back to about 2010 ish for some of these guys coming out of high school, what I'm starting to see is when the guy's body type has changed, when a guy's grown and added a lot of muscle, you see some dramatic jumps in the testing. And that kind of jives with Garrett. Another guy who had a huge dramatic change was Zay Jones, who had an outstanding combine last year, the receiver for the Bills. He came out of high school with like a 5.1 40 time, and he ran in the 4.4s at the combine. That he had put on a couple of inches and gained about 20 pounds or 25 pounds since high school. So you see some dramatic changes, but when a guy has a similar body type and you don't see a lot of change, that's where I didn't see a lot of change in the high school to college results. Dalvin Cook's an example. Leonard Fournette's an example. Kevin King, the cornerback for the Green Bay Packers out of Washington, he was a player who tested very, very well out of high school, very, very well out of the pros. He had a similar body type, tall, skinny guy. So that's kind of where I'm starting to see some consistency now that we're getting more and more results. The exception seems to be 40 time. That seems to be something that guys can improve. You don't see it too many dramatic improvements. You don't see a guy necessarily go from like 4.9 to 4.4 without changing his body type, but you might see a guy go from 4.9 to 4.6 or a high 4.5. So that's definitely where I went wrong with Garrett. I should have probably put more stock into the fact that he was a muscular guy with a pretty good vertical, and that he just might not have known how to do the drills. And the other thing about Garrett was he never did the, like those running backs, like Fournette, like Ezekiel Elliott, he never did the shuttle drills. So we really don't know if he was all that agile of a guy from the testing standpoint.
Yeah, I was curious about that last year with some of these high school guys where they just might just show up one day and do these tests as opposed to when they're leading up to the combine and they're going through, you know, weeks and weeks of training to get ready for that. And I was wondering maybe particularly for a guy like Garrett, like he just, you know, he just showed up one day like I'm a five-star player. I'm going to run these 40s or do these jumps or whatever when he was 18. But now that, you know, he's 21, 22, it's like, no, this is my livelihood type of stuff. So that was something, a part of the process that I was curious if maybe you thought that was a factor as well. And so maybe you couldn't put as much stock in sort of the high school testing numbers as maybe you had previously done.
Yeah, I think it's a factor for sure. And I wouldn't say I put a ton of stock into it as far as my evaluation. It was more of trying to predict how a guy would do at the combine as he goes into the pro game. So this is something that you and I talked about off the air, but one thing I think that these high school scores can be helpful with are some of the prop bets. And in that respect, we would actually, if we would have put some money on Myles Garrett on the prop bets based on my projections, we would have won some money.
Okay, there you go. All right, so there is actual real world value to all this stuff. If people,
it can impact your wallet, and, yeah. And you know, it impacts their wallet. We know it impacts their wallet, but it can impact ours as well if we're paying attention.
All right, guys, we're going to come back and talk a little bit further with Justin on some of the players he thinks he could rise or slide based off of their combine performances. But since we're talking draft, you guys might want to check out Locked On NFL Draft with hosts John Ledger and Trevor Sikkema, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day. All right, so let's jump into some of these guys that you, looking at some of their high school data, maybe we can, you know, do a better job being using that as a predictive model for certain guys that may test particularly well or certain guys that may not test quite as well as maybe people would expect. And I'll give you the floor and you can start off with any group that you particularly want to.
Okay. Some guys that I expect are going to test well based on the fact that they already did test well and that they've kind of maintained a similar body, if not maybe added some muscle. And that is Saquon Barkley and Christian Kirk are the two big names. I think Cortland Sutton is a player. He's a receiver out of SMU, and he came in kind of as kind of a raw athlete, but he is a 6'4", 215, and he appears to have improved his vertical and his 40 time from high school to college. I think he's going to have a big leap because I think he was still growing when he got to college. Kentavious Street is a defensive lineman from NC State, and he is billed as a freak athlete, a player who may run around 4.6, between 4.6 and 4.7 at 285 pounds. That's an incredible speed for that weight. So Street is a player who is already billed as a freak coming into the year. He was on Bruce Feldman's freak list, and just he's expected to have a 30-plus vertical, I think even 35-inch vertical, and even do well on the shuttle. So Street is a player. He didn't put a ton of production on the field, but I think he's going to be one of the big combine risers. And then you got a couple defensive backs here. Justin Reed is Eric Reed, the safety for the 49ers. He's Eric Reed's younger brother. Justin Reed's also a safety. He's out of Stanford. I think he's going to test really well. And then the cornerback from Texas, who's going to get dinged for some off-the-field issues, is Holton Hill, but I expect he will also test well. He's another tall, a tall 200-pound plus defensive back. And those two guys, for their testing, Reed and Hill, NFL loves 6 foot plus, 200-pound plus defensive backs that can run. I think those guys are going to fit the bill. I got some names on the downside, too. And these are some names that are kind of big. These are big names, but these are for the same reasons I just talked about. Their bodies didn't change a lot. And I think their testing is going to prove to be a little bit disappointing, and I'll explain. Quentin Nelson is a guard from Notre Dame, and we don't know like how big of a deal it is for a guard to not be able to run a great 40 or do great shuttles, but I think he's being billed as a top five pick. And I think if you just look at his testing numbers, they're going to come out on the disappointing end. And people are going to have to go back and see if that affected his on-field play. The way he plays guard, I'm not sure it's going to be that big of a deal for him, but I think you're going to see some slow times there. Calvin Ridley, the receiver from Alabama, I think he's going to have a very fast 40 time and not much else. I think the jumps will kind of be disappointing, and the shuttles probably just kind of average for a receiver. Now, we'll have to determine like how important that is for a guy with his game, but at 6 foot, 6'1", 190, it might be enough for him to just blaze a fast 40 time. And then Darius Geis, the running back from LSU, another guy I think is going to have a really good 40 time, probably in the mid-4.4s. But then I think the jumps are going to be disappointing, and I think he's going to actually skip the shuttles like Zeke Elliott and Fournette did. Especially after what we saw from Dalvin Cook last year. He was very slow in the three cone and the short shuttle. Again, with running backs, I'm not sure that makes that much of a difference when the guy has a running style like Geis. He's kind of a slasher, and having, you know, just being able to decisively make the cuts and run a good 40. But I think if he does run the shuttles, you're going to hear some murmurs about that. And the last guy I have on this list is a player, a receiver from Memphis. He was getting some hype toward the end of the year, and that's Anthony Miller. He ended up missing the Senior Bowl because of a foot injury. Apparently, he's got a medical red flag there, but that's another player I think will run a slower than expected 40 time. He didn't change his body a whole lot from when he was a high schooler running a 4.8 until now. So I think if he ran a 4.6, 4.5, high 4.5, something like that, it wouldn't surprise me at all. And this kind of reminds me of a guy a couple years ago, Rashard Higgins, who was a very prolific receiver out of Colorado State, who had a disappointing combine and fell all the way to the fifth round.
Interesting thoughts there. Yeah, it's interesting that you mentioned the wide receivers, and in particular a guy like Ridley, where if he runs a fast 40, you know, historically we know oftentimes, if you run a fast 40, that's all you need to do as a wide receiver, because we've seen a lot of guys get overdrafted. The name that jumps into my head is a guy like Devin Smith for the Jets, who has, you know, been dealing with injuries since he got into the league, but really has not contributed much. And I think it was a early second round pick, if I'm not mistaken, a couple of years ago, and largely due to a really fast 40. So even if Ridley doesn't test particularly well, if he hits that sort of magic 40 button, I think for a lot of teams, they really sort of value that, or, you know, arguably overvalue that ability to, you know, test defenses vertically. And so it may not wind up affecting Ridley's stock all that much, but it will be interesting to sort of see how he tests in other areas. Cause I know a team like the Falcons and teams like the Patriots and whatnot, they really put a lot of stock, particularly at some of those positions like wide receiver and cornerback, on that short area quickness that you sort of see in the shuttles and then three cone drills.
Right. And I don't know if Ridley's going to have that great shuttle like we've seen from some of these slot receivers recently. And he could end up testing like another guy I mentioned earlier, Will Fuller, but I think he's going to be a little bit heavier than that. So that's going to be a plus in his, you know, a plus for him. But this is a player that I see in the mock drafts a lot as like the eighth overall pick or the top receiver. And I'm not sure that the numbers are going to look like top receiver type of numbers. So, you know, one of the things, he had a 28-inch vertical out of high school, and he weighed about the same weight that he's listed at now. So how much could that have improved? How much did it improve? And you certainly want to see a vertical of, you know, over 32 inches for a receiver, just so that they, just so it improves the catch radius. And I'm not sure, you know, if his game is just going to be beating you over the top with speed. He didn't have the same kind of tape in that regard as a guy like Fuller did. So Ridley this year, we saw him beat defenses deep more often. But the year before, he was kind of a screen and quick hitter guy and only averaged about 11 yards a catch. So he's kind of a mixed bag for me. And not to say that I think he's a bad player or anything like that, but he's not your typical wide receiver one in the draft, and that's where he's being mocked.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, we'll see how it goes. It's always interesting to see which guys test well, and you mentioned it at the top when we were talking about the value of the combine. I think some of these athletic tests really help a lot of guys sort of in the day three range, and teams, I think, are a little bit more willing to take a flyer on some of these athletes. That was the Seahawks model. And a lot of teams, as you say, have sort of adopted that the last couple of years and putting a little bit more stock on, you know, the quote unquote athletic upside, hoping that they can do what the Seahawks did in those early drafts under Carroll and then John Schneider, with hitting on some of those day three picks like they famously did with guys like Cam Chancellor and Richard Sherman and KJ Wright and among others. So I think, you know, this is where the combine is important, certainly in terms of the individual players, as you said, in terms of they're making their own money. And I think it does, you know, I think teams tend to underplay when they make public statements about how important they put the combine in. But I think the proof is in the pudding in terms of how much they value it. And it is an important piece of the puzzle, not the most important piece, but certainly a significant portion of it.
Yeah, definitely. And I think you hit on an important point there. Like, for the day three guys, are you going to gamble on the upside plays where they have the great test thing but didn't put the production on the field? Or do you use those day three picks on guys that were very productive but who didn't hit the marks that you wanted to see at the combine? So I mentioned Rashard Higgins. He ends up being a fifth-round pick. Famously, Antonio Brown tested very poorly coming out of Central Michigan, and he ends up going in the fifth round, I believe. Fifth or sixth round, I can't really remember at this point. But yeah, and he was the, I think at the time, and maybe still the school's all-time leading receiver. And you know, obviously the production was there, but the testing and the size wasn't what you want out of a player when you're picking earlier. So I talk about this sometimes, you know, every year it comes up, but you don't see Antonio Brown and then start looking for that player in the second round, because that's going to end up being a miss more often than not. So, but that is an example of good scouting, of finding a guy on day three where you have that exceptional production and there's that extra fire there that helps him, you know, perfect his game and really improve on some of the areas where he might have been a little bit weak in the workouts. And obviously after 1 year of just kind of flying under the radar, producing as a rookie, I think he only had, you know, 13 catches or something like that. Next year, he has had a year in the pro program. He's latched onto some guys, learned a pro work ethic, and he takes that leap. So that's, to me, that's an example of good scouting. It would be bad scouting if you try and find the next Antonio Brown in the first or second round, just ignoring the testing, ignoring the size.
Yeah, it's interesting that you mentioned that, because like immediately that popped in my head is a player that the Falcons picked a couple of years ago in Justin Hardy, who was a highly productive player at East Carolina, and then sort of had a really good three-cone drill, and that was sort of enough for the Falcons to be like, you know, the production and this upside in terms of his short area quickness, you know, sort of meshes, and we'll take him in the fourth round. And then you're mentioning sort of, you know, the quote-unquote reaching on some of these, you know, prospects, these Antonio Brown-like prospects. It reminds me a little bit of Richard Sherman, you know, he was a fifth round pick for the Seahawks back in 2011, I think it was. And, you know, after that, after the success of the Seahawks, the next couple of years, you saw teams really valuing these long, lengthy corners. The Falcons took one in Jalen Collins. I remember the Saints took a guy, Stanley Jean-Baptiste. And a lot of these guys just really didn't work out for teams. And you do wonder if it's part of what you were just talking about, where some of these guys would be better options as high upside day three picks. But now when teams are picking these guys in the late first or early second round, they're overvaluing a certain skill set that may not necessarily mesh there. Would you agree with that? That's a good analogy.
Yeah, exactly. That's exactly what I'm saying. It's for sure. The Sherman example is a perfect example. Yeah. You see a team hit on Sherman, who was just a tall corner who really had that rocky Senior Bowl that year. And you didn't really expect too much of him as a prospect. And they hit on him, and all of a sudden teams are trying to find Richard Sherman in the first or second round. It just doesn't work that way.
We got more combine talk coming at you a little bit later. But maybe you guys are, now that the NFL season is over, you're feeling that gap in your heart and your soul in terms of football talk. And if you want to get a general overview of what's going on around the league, then you should check out host Matt Williamson on Locked On NFL, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day, now part of Spotify. So I want to end on some of your thoughts on some of the Pro Bowl snubs. I was listening to Eric Galco of Optimum Scouting on another podcast talk about how the Combine changed their process in terms of basically taking a popularity poll among teams in order to indicate their invites among players. And you recently wrote an article on revengeofthebirds.com about some of the more prominent snubs. And I'm curious sort of where some of the players that won't be in Indianapolis in a couple of weeks, who do you think are some of those guys that certainly have slipped through the cracks?
Well, the one of the interesting ones to me was Kyle Allen. He's a quarterback. He was a five-star recruit. He went to Texas A&M and transferred to Houston. Now, he never really caught on as a full-time starting quarterback, but he's an underclassman. He left a year of eligibility on the table, and you don't often see underclassmen quarterbacks left out of the combine. So I thought that was interesting, not super surprising because, like I said, he was never a big-time starter, but usually the NFL wants to take an extra look at a guy like that. So I'm guessing he's just, at this point, looking at trying to catch on as a tryout player. Puna Ford was a player who was at the Shrine Game and the Senior Bowl. He's a defensive tackle from Texas, but he measured under 6 feet tall. And you just don't see a lot of under 6 foot tall defensive linemen in the NFL. So I think when it came down to that voting for scouts, there just wasn't enough support to get him in as a player who's that undersized. He's probably another guy who's looking at trying to catch on as an undrafted free agent. Now, on the flip side of that, we have an offensive lineman, Cody O'Connell from Washington State. He is 6'9", 365, so he's kind of the opposite of Ford. He's almost to the point where he's too big because at 6'9", he's offensive tackle size, but he doesn't move well enough to play offensive tackle. So you don't see a lot of guards at 6'9". There's one, Alex Boone, who's 6'8", who's had a long career, but that's really the exception to the rule. And as we've been kind of talking about tonight, the exceptions to the rule are not necessarily high priority scouting. So with O'Connell, he gets left out. That was probably one of the bigger surprises, but I understand the reasoning behind it. And then Joe Osman from Central Michigan, he led the FBS in sacks, but he's a tweener. He's like 6'2", 248, and he doesn't move well enough to be a linebacker. So he looks more like a situational pass rusher, special teamer, high motor kind of guy. And I just don't think he had – it was interesting that a guy who would led the FBS in sacks is left out, but I can see the reasoning behind that too. I think he should be there, because I would like to see what he can do, but I do get why they left him out. He was a Shrine Game guy as well. probably the biggest surprise to me was Ito Smith. He's a running back from Southern Miss, and he came in at 5'9", 201. He was a Senior Bowl guy. I think he's going to run pretty well. I think he'll run probably in the 4.5s. He had three straight seasons where he had over 1,100 rushing yards. He had over 40 catches, and he had over 13 touchdowns. So to see a player from the FBS, he's, again, a shade over 200 pounds, has that kind of production, Senior Bowl invite, and then to not get a combine invite, that was the biggest surprise to me. I don't think he's an early round pick by any means. I saw some analysts were comparing him to LeSean McCoy, and I think that was a bridge too far. But I think he still should have been in Indianapolis.
Okay, yeah. All right, Justin, I appreciate you coming on and sharing your insights in, you know, some of the guys that may have slipped through the cracks. And, you know, every year there's a couple of guys that don't get invited to the combine but wind up getting drafted and, you know, going on to have success. And I think that sort of pushes the narrative that, you know, some people like to talk about how the combine is overrated, certainly. And we'll see how some of these guys go when we get, you know, where the pro days are going to be a lot more important for some of these guys that don't get the opportunity to go to the combine. But thanks again for coming on and sharing your insights into some of these guys that may test particularly well. I'll certainly take another look at some of the prop bets and maybe see if I can make a little bit of money off of that. And I think the listeners would appreciate that as well.
Yeah, keep your eyes peeled at revengeofthebirds.com because once those odds come out on the prop bets, once we find out what we're looking for, I will post an article and try and help some people win a little bit of cash.
Okay, there you go. So, Justin, let the people know where they can find you online, on Twitter and elsewhere.
You can follow me on Twitter. I'm at AFC, the number 2, NFC. And I've been writing at revengeofthebirds.com here and there. And also been doing a mock draft for the Arizona Cardinals at dailymockdraft.com. That's a new site. They've got a new mock draft for – the goal is, I think, for every – all 32 NFL teams to have a new mock draft every day. I think we're hitting that for most of the teams, give or take. We're using the fanspeak.com mock draft app to produce those. So it's interesting. It's you know, I don't know how realistic it is, but we're at least giving people an idea of who might fall to their teams on a given pick. And we'll put some highlight videos up there too if people are unfamiliar with the players. So it's a nice tool this time of year.
Yeah. Yeah, I've definitely checked out the guy who does the Falcons ones. He's been putting those up, and I've been checking those out lately. So, yeah, sounds good. All right, Justin, I appreciate you coming on, and I hope, you know, maybe we'll get an opportunity later this spring to have you back on and talk a little bit more draft.
Sounds great. Thanks for having me on.
All right, man. You have a good evening.
Yeah, you too.
All right, guys. That was Justin Higdon, AFC to NFC on Twitter. Check him out on Revenge of the Birds. Always good analysis and whatnot, and combine, and looking forward to more discussion of the combine in the coming days and weeks as we guys get you geared up to it. It doesn't start till the 27th, I believe, is the day when players report, and the 28th is that Wednesday, I think, is the day when the testing starts. I think it's what, offensive linemen and quarterbacks that first day or something like that, or tight ends or whatever it is. I don't know. You know, having been one of these people that sits there and watches NFL Network all day long, if I'm not working during these combine weeks, I should know these stuff, but I don't. So I'm not completely lame in that regard. So, all right, let's get out of here and let's talk about what we have coming up. Later this week, we will do a Q&A. Probably will be up Friday. So if you get your questions, if it's posting on Friday, that means we'll record it on Thursday afternoon / evening. So get your questions in between now and then. Some of you have already sent in questions over the last couple of weeks that I have not gotten to on either LockedOnFalcons.com or in the last week's Q&A episode. I will be getting to some of those earlier questions, but you can send in yours in the next, 48 hours, I guess, and maybe some of the better ones will be featured on the next podcast episode. As you guys know, I try to keep those Q&As as short as humanly possible, 30 to 40 minutes. And so any leftover questions that I do not get on the show will be answered on LockedOnFalcons.com. You can see leftovers questions pertaining to the offseason from last weekend on LockedOnFalcons.com. But of course, how do you submit those questions? Of course, you can use Twitter. I'm at FalcFans. If it's podcast related, your comment, your question, or whatever it is, just indicate in that tweet to FalcFans. But if it is podcast related, the easiest way to let me know that is just to send it to LockedOnFalcons. That's the show's Twitter handle. That's the easiest pathway to get your podcast related questions and comments to me. If you don't like Twitter, you hate their character limits, you don't have Twitter, you can always use Facebook, everybody's favorite, everybody's grandmother's favorite social media platform. The Facebook page is Locked on Falcons. Give us a like while you're there. If you don't want to use social media, email is a great method. That's LockedOnFalcons@mail.com, mail.com. And if you don't want to use any of those, then of course you can leave a comment on LockedOnFalcons.com or FalcFans.com, where the show is posted daily as well. So that's it, guys. Appreciate you guys talking more or coming back and listening to more Combine talk. I know we still got another week of content to fill. We'll probably talk in a little bit more draft and whatnot. And, you know, once the combine hits, we might pivot a little bit more towards free agency in early March. But if you have any suggestions, comments on what other topics we can hit between now and the start of free agency, I am all ears. And, of course, now you have the ways in which you can communicate your opinions to me. So there's that. All right, guys, stay locked on, and we'll be back on Friday with a Q&A.
You are Locked On Falcons, your daily Atlanta Falcons podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.